Oh, hey, what's up?
How are you?
World.
You're out in the world.
I am.
That's exciting. What is the
Yeah.
world like?
It's real hot because we messed our planet up.
We've ruined everything.
But don't mind that. Everything's on fire, but it's cool and totally normal, right?
Absolutely.
I'm at an undisclosed location, but I am out in the world.
Oh, that's so much more exciting.
And I brought my drink to go, prepared it, brought it to go.
That's adorable.
I know, right? I thought it was. I mean, most of what I do is very cute and adorable. It's what I'm known for.
It is. People are like, tell me about Leah in one word, and I say, she's adorable.
Adorable. She's pint-sized and adorable
Pint-sized.
and generally just looks on the brighter side of life. Also, I took it on the road because I'm going on a I should say in my post I said I'm taking it on the road and I was in a car. Theology on the Rocks does not endorse drinking and
We
driving,
do
and in
not
fact
endorse that. No,
I
no.
did a follow-up post that said, in fact, the car is parked for the night because I live in a place that I can walk to
Yes.
most of the places I like going to. So,
You have really perfected that, honestly. Like, I wish that I could walk to things. And it's like a goal. Ever since living in Glasgow, I'm like, I want to live where I can walk to places. But
well, the goal is you move to a city that's not expensive. Keyword
that,
yet.
yeah,
And then you
that
find a place that's fairly affordable in that place that people haven't moved to yet. And it'll probably be in the south because everything's cheap. So I want to say that St. Petersburg is an undiscovered gem, but
it's not.
I'm pretty sure
It's been discovered.
it's been discovered. So
It is. Somebody told me recently that it's in the top some number of places to live in the United States, and I was like, I really need to stop living in trendy places.
you do. You went from Denver to St. Pete, which
I
is
know
like,
this is
I
not
went from Atlanta to Charlotte. So,
this is
10
the
out of 10
wrong
recommend.
it is the wrong trajectory if you want to afford your housing. Well, you have already made your drink, and I am making it as we speak. So,
So, the drink today, I'll talk about it while you make
yes.
it. How about that? We were trying to think of a August. By the way, if you hear music in the background, sincerest apologies,
But
but
we should have
that's
music in the background.
maybe
If
we
you
should
guys
have
want
music.
music in the background, become our editor.
Yeah, right. For free,
For
please.
free.
Because we
We
cannot.
can't pay you.
So we were thinking about what does August say, and for Christy and I, August is maybe perpetually our purgatory of going back to school. So she actually saw me work through this on Apollo, which is a fun little messaging device, and I was just like, apples, we should do apples. And then I was like, what goes with apples? I'm gonna Google it, be right back. And the internet said vodka.
The internet does say vodka.
And then I said, well, this has got to have a name, surely. And because I'd forgotten all of Scrubs, apparently, my entire
Know.
Scrubs career. I used to
So
be well
sad.
versed, but it's been a minute. It's an
Sorry, that
apple.
was
It's
loud.
an app. That was a lot of liquid. Whatever. I'm hoping that was the vodka and not the apple. Just like it. It's an appletini though, so we're having a back to
Loud again, sorry.
school appletini.
We're having an appletini, which so I associate appletinis with scrubs so much.
Yes.
But I've actually never had an appletini. This is going to be my first one that I'm trying desperately to make from scratch, and I am here to tell you that was the wrong
Once
choice.
again, I am not. I got like an apple soda thing and mixed it with vodka. that I had in a tiny bottle from an airplane.
Here's the thing is that, you know how many of us have a liquor that we can't drink anymore because of experiences?
Yes. Mine is a Jaeger bomb. Trip and I discussed this once before.
Mine is Puckers, or any kind of like Puckers-esque, like the fruity liqueurs.
Like sours?
Sour is apple.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what everybody was like, this is what you make an appletini with. And I was like, I can't do that, or I will just immediately. We already had me gagging last week, so I felt like, so I'm making mine with apple juice because that was the other option.
Yeah, I feel like that's okay. I mean, I just got a knockoff apples, some no brand apple soda at the grocery store.
And then I was like, okay, is there a like recipe of sorts? And everything is like, put apple juice and Puckers. It's like, please, dear God, stop with the Puckers. So it's got, mine has a wee bit of maple syrup in it. So we're going to see.
Look at you. If you've learned anything from Theology on the Rocks, listeners, it's that you never do things from scratch.
It's the easy road in making all of your drinks.
Because essentially what you're going to be doing is picking stuff out of your drink the whole night.
You're just going to be spending the entire time going, why have I done this to myself? But
yeah.
All right. I'm ready. You're ready.
Yeah. Let's I haven't drank it yet though. I waited for you.
Oh, good. Okay.
Well, yeah.
Let's try it out.
I made it. Cheers. It's probably boiling now. But that's fine. It
probably is overheated.
All right. 1, 2, 3. Well, that's
not bad at all.
Really good, actually.
I mean, given
JD was right the whole time. We should have been drinking appletinis.
JD, you know, smarter than we ever gave you credit for, JD.
Well, Zach Braff. God, I had a crush on that guy.
Oh, jeez. So much. I would still say that I'm probably a fan of Zach Braff.
Yeah, I mean, I think so.
I have seen all his movies.
I will say Gardens. You and I talked about this. Garden State, it hits different in your 40s than it did in your 20s.
Garden State has a bit of a different flavor when you're...
I'm like, why is she listening to the Shins at the so loudly?
So loudly. Obsessively.
And why is there no one else in this office?
I love the Shins, but it was inappropriate. We shouldn't be listening to music just out loud in public.
Also, it's the worst doctor in the world that it's only Natalie Portman and Zach Braff at this office.
That's fair. That's fair. Just the two of them hanging out.
Who have vastly different issues. So, and like, it would be different if it was just like, oh, it's a GP, but like, she's going very specifically for something. And he is too. Like, hers is like her seizures and his is like mental health, which
right. I mean, very maybe... different things.
Yes.
Also, didn't she have to wear a helmet?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
She's just a quirky pixie dream girl.
I will say his second movie, Wish I Was Here, was a delight. Mandy Patinkin is in it.
Is that the one with Florence Pugh?
No, that's the most recent one, which is called... I don't remember what it's called. I did see it. I saw it in the theater.
Yeah.
Morgan Freeman and Florence Pugh are in that one. And Shannon, what's her name? Molly Shannon from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
That's a perfect, what is it called?
He's just a cameo.
Anyway,
he's just a little bit on the nose.
A good person. That's what it's called. It's a good person.
There we go.
No, Wish I Was Here. Kate Hudson is in it and Mandy Patinkin. And it's just, I really loved it. And the soundtrack is phenomenal, which is really
good. He can do a soundtrack. I mean, I think it's, we had a friend to go see a Wes Anderson film, the newest one, Asteroid City. And I think Wes Anderson also hasn't aged as well with me as I would have hoped in my 20s.
Well,
I am dead inside, but also, I mean, I am currently reading The Plague by Albert Camus, so that's cool. But, like, you know, all this joy.
Just the joy, the joyous things that we study.
I know. I saw your, I don't know if you saw, I messaged, this is how silly we are. I messaged Christy on from my personal Instagram to the Theology on the Rocks. So I said, we need a drink.
We do need to drink. I know, because I'm reading Literary Ethics of Suffering at the moment.
Cool.
So much fun. A great book, though. I highly recommend it.
I mean, yeah, I would recommend I don't think I need to recommend The Plague because it's like what people read in high school. So
yeah, I think Camus is well known. I think we're good.
I think I should promote him. He's just this little hole in the wall author. Just like
so much.
Just like an emerging person.
It's true. Yeah, no, we both need to find a happier subject to write about for our next books, because
well, that's not happening for me, but the next one
it's not happening for me either. But
no. Oh yeah. Oh well, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm just gonna tease it. We're really close to an exciting announcement.
Okay, there we go. Okay.
Next week, but exciting announcement next week. But we do have other exciting things to tell you, because once again, we implore you all to come visit us at Theology Beer Camp, and to register for that using our code, which is RocksGodPod, and to come and listen to both of us speak and to watch us do Hot Ones and Die. And there's other speakers.
Christy's been trying to undermine that and not do it, guys, just so you know.
But I am not.
Single time we mention any sort of gimmicky thing, she's like, "Oh, that's better than the hot sauce," and it's starting to hurt my feelings, guys.
It's not that I'm saying it's better. It's that I'm saying we won't die. Like
my feelings, Christy, they're hurt.
I think we're gonna have some serious medical issues.
I think you're right. I think we may have to do it the last day of beer camp, because we may not be there.
Fully inebriated. Just I don't know if that helps. Does beer help with horrifically hot sauce?
I mean, you're asking completely the wrong person.
I know. No, you know what, listeners, could you tell us what the best plan for us to survive the Hot Ones challenge is?
Well, they always drink milk on the show.
That's true. They do.
I think that feels gross to me, but
you don't like milk. I like milk. I mean, I'm like a weirdo.
I don't drink it just like, do you drink it like in a glass?
I do.
Ooh.
I know, it's weird.
Is it not like kind of whatever that noise is?
I don't feel that way. I enjoy it, but I understand why people don't. I think it's a weird.
I affirm you and your milk. But it is weird.
It's weird. It's unless fine.
You're like a goat or a baby, I don't know why you would just go for it. But, you know, that's fine.
You know what? Sometimes I just feel strongly about having a glass of milk. My dog is having the biggest tantrum because she's not on my lap right now.
Those are cars.
That was not a giant sigh coming out of the air.
That wasn't me also complaining. Actually, I think they're motorcycles, but that's okay. So I had a question given by a listener.
We did.
And this isn't like an official question, but it was like a fun question. Do we have any nicknames?
We do have nicknames.
We do. And if so, what are they? And what did they come from?
Well, I'll go first.
Chrissy's last name is Whaley.
My last name is Whaley. And this actually is a funny and maybe a dating story. Like, I will be dated by this.
I thought you meant dating as in, like, no. You're going out on a date. And I was about to get my apple martini.
You were about to be so excited. No. When I was in high school, one of my friends said to me, and I want to stress that this was really meant in like a funny way, but I understand the problems with it now. She said, "Oh, your last name is Whaley. It's a good thing you're not really fat."
Oh, Lord.
And then everyone started calling me Whales.
Oh.
It came from a weird place, but my nickname is Whales. Everyone I know calls me this in some respect. Students have called me this. It's morphed. No one ever refers to it as like this weird way anymore, but to the point where there are some people in my life who I think genuinely don't know my first name. They just know my Whale's name. But it also,
well, there we go.
Everyone gives me stuff with Whales on it. Like pictures and...
And you also have a tattoo.
I do have a tattoo. My brother and I got tattoos as a dare. Mine is on my foot and his is on his back. And then we have basically forced the rest of our family into this. So our other brother got his most recently. My oldest niece has a whale tattoo. We're just trying to bully my sister into doing it now.
I mean, you guys just really leaned in.
We leaned in hard. We were like, you know what? This is who we are. Our last name is Whaley. It lends itself really easily to a nickname.
Yeah, you kind of set yourself up for that one.
I will say my one mistake was putting Hebrew because I was in seminary. And as we know, seminarians tend to get Greek or Hebrew tattoos. I put Hebrew right next to the whale. And so a lot of people think that it has to do with Jonah, and it does not.
Well, they'll just need to take Hebrew.
They will.
Suffer through that situation for a while.
Through Hebrew, and then I'll tell you what it means.
I hope that people could hear the music in the background because it was Daniel Johnston's Love is Gonna Find You, I think is what it's called. Anyway, that's a side note. I was getting distracted while you were telling me.
Okay.
But, what is your nickname, Leah? Well, but also, what does your Hebrew say? I always forget.
It says love.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
It doesn't say like Carl or an ex-boyfriend, which is good.
It says love, and it really does. It's not, I mean, again, I have a lot of people who actually speak Hebrew, double check it for me.
Oh, yeah. Good job.
Yeah.
Isn't there an actress that has like...
It's Ariana Grande. She has Japanese barbecue tattooed on her.
That's correct. Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say. I thought it was Chinese, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had a lot of people double check it in my own kind of resources, but
I mean, yeah. We went to seminary, and
we know
Jewish people, and hopefully, but with the combination of that,
yeah. It's, if you're going to get a tattoo in a foreign language, it's best to do it when you know people who are fluent in that language. So
you've heard it here first, guys.
Yes. That's our tattoo advice for you guys.
Yes. Very, very, very good idea.
Yeah.
So my nickname started in high school because there were weirdly two Leahs.
Shocking.
It wasn't a very popular name back in the day.
That makes sense, I guess. I feel like it's gotten more popular.
Maybe so. Maybe. Although I don't really meet many Leahs, I don't think. But we'll say okay. But it wasn't in the year of our Lord, the 1990s, it wasn't very popular. But there was one that was Leah, and it was spelled like Leia, like the Star Wars, which was a real commitment.
Yeah.
Mine is Leah, like the Bible.
Like the Bible.
Like the Bible. And so I was Leah R, and she was technically Leia, but it's North Georgia, so she was Leah A. So it started where people just would say Lear when they referred to me.
Yeah.
Because also we hung out in the same circles. It's different if you just like don't care about the person.
Right. If you don't care. No. This is what happens when you have the same name as a friend.
Yeah. Which, Christy, I'm sure you never shared a single name with a friend.
Not one time. No.
Not once.
So many times.
So basically it started as that. And then also I will say my middle initial is E, Elizabeth. because that very unique for the 90s, of course. And
it's not Marie. Hey, neither of us are Maries. So.
Neither of us are Maries, but I'm going to say Elizabeth really takes my uniqueness down several notches. So then I just used to sign things L-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of evolved. My best friend Misty in college would just call me Lur.
Yeah.
And then you'll notice my name on Instagram is Lur Beast. And a lot of times people, they're like, what is that? And so that came from living in Belfast, actually, where I was sitting watching Henry with what's his face that does all the things. Attenborough.
Oh,
yeah. Attenborough.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like Blue Planet or something like that. And there were these little, let's just say some guys that I knew from Belfast, Irish guys, and we were all partaking of maybe an Appletini or two. And we were watching this documentary, and there was this little rabbit that was like a snow rabbit. And it started screaming, though. Like, it was like hopping around in like the mountains. They and then all of a sudden, it started yelling. And I mean, like, yelling, like, ah, yelling. And one of the guys turned to me and said, you know, if you were an animal, that's what you would
be. That's what you would be?
He's like, you were hopping around all cute and fluffy, and then you just started screaming.
That's fantastic.
And then another guy on the couch was like, because they'd heard, they're like, oh, it's a Lear Beast.
Yep.
That's what it is. And so they named that rabbit who yells in the mountains is a Lear Beast. And so that's
so fantastic.
Yeah. So it evolved. It really evolved.
It
went on a journey. And so now it's sort of stuck. Yeah. I feel like you have to be younger to get a nickname.
I agree. I feel like I'm not going to get new nicknames anymore, but I do. I mean, again, the amount of people who call me Wales, I feel like if I had a different nickname, it would just get confusing at this point.
Yeah. I mean, we're old enough now that we can stick with these. I feel confident in them.
I feel good. Yeah. It's funny because my sister and I both are not huge fans of our actual names. And occasionally people are like, what would you rather I call you? And I'm like, honestly, Wales is my preferred name.
More than Christy?
More than Christy.
You've never told me this, Wales. No, what's your preferred name, Wales?
It's Wales. I would rather you call me Wales.
I do have people that run my credit card that say, oh, Mrs. Robinson. And that's happened for my whole life. And each time they think they're the first ones.
Yeah.
And
I had a friend whose name was Will Robinson.
Oh,
and the amount of times that we would just be like, danger, Will Robinson.
And the thing is, I bet it was the 1,000th time. He probably still giggled at you, because that's what I do whenever someone's, I'm like, oh, look at you. And it's literally 4,000. Yeah. Yeah. And also, it's Dr. Robinson. Thank you.
Right, exactly. It is not Mrs. It's Dr. Perfect.
Yeah, exactly. And I say it in that voice, in Californian's voice. It's Dr.
Dr. I did have a student ask me, because it's the beginning of the semester, and so as they're trying to like figure out their lives, one of my students was like, do you require us to call you professor? And I was like, actually, it's doctor.
And then I
died inside a little bit. I was like, oh no, I actually said this to a person.
100%. I would say I never let my students call me by first name, like,
no,
ever. And it may be a woman thing, but it's also like professor was easy, not easy, because this is not diminishing the job hustle of an academic, but like, it took me a long time to get that doctor, and a lot of crying, a lot of coffee.
Oh, you're going to call me doctor. Some of my friends will call me Dr. Wales, actually.
There you go. Yeah.
No, it's an earned title. And actually, I've seen a lot of people talk about this, and I think that it is often an issue with women professors, that if we let them, especially if we're younger or younger looking, letting our students call us by our first name establishes an inappropriate kind of, they're not going to see us as the authority. There's not enough respect, et cetera, et cetera. And then obviously that leads to problems. Whereas like men or older men, especially, can be like, oh, just call me by my first name. And they're like, oh, he's cool and casual instead of,
oh my
like,
gosh, I know. I worked with, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's frustrating because I don't, oh, I mean, I'm very proud of the doctor title, and I love that I can do that, but it is so serious sometimes that I feel like, yeah, I would love to not care, but I have to, because I already have to work so hard to make you guys respect me. And I'm not going to be like, also just call me by my first name. It's fine. You know,
if they say Leah, I'm sorry, who?
Yeah.
And then they'll say, oh, Mrs. Robinson. And I'll say, that's my mom. That's my mom.
Yeah. That's my mom.
And doctor. Yeah. And then someone will poke them usually. I mean, this is going to come as a shock to nobody, but I try to be a little bit scary in my classes because it is one of those things where I'm like, you know, I always use the line, I'm a benevolent dictator. Mm-hmm. And the dictator part is that, no, you cannot negotiate assignments or the syllabus. That's not what's happening.
That's not how this life works.
Yeah. But I promise that, you know, you'll be protected in class and your conversations are protected. And also that most of these assignments are for the greater good, hence the benevolent, but real emphasis on the dictator, I should say.
I tell my students very similar things that, you know, I'm scary if I have to be scary. And if I'm scary, then it's on you, really. But like, I don't do late work unless there's discussions ahead of time and stuff, you know?
Yeah. You have rules and you stick to it, which if you were, I mean, I'm thinking about the Taylor Swift song because it was playing.
We were men. Yeah.
Yeah. We could be a little bit more casual, but I mean, there is just differences.
There is.
And,
well, and there's differences in the evaluations too, because,
oh my gosh.
I mean, how many of your male colleagues have gotten an evaluation saying something like, he wears too much makeup, or I don't like his outfits.
She needs to smile more, which, if you want me to smile more, you picked the wrong professor.
My favorite, and by favorite I mean the one that made me rage the most, was an evaluation that said that they understood that I was very knowledgeable and that I obviously really was passionate about it. They just weren't sure if I was qualified.
Oh.
And I was like, what other thing do I have to do for you to be qualified in this?
Also, I'm not sure it's their job to evaluate.
No, I think that me just being hired by the people who are
supposed to evaluate your qualifications.
I think we can just assume that I am qualified, but yeah.
Be like, are you in HR? Because I don't remember you.
I don't remember being interviewed by you.
No, but it's totally like a total gender. I mean, it is a gender bias. And when I was at a department for a while, I read some truly sort of truly horrific things from evaluations, and I'm actually kind of anti-evaluation.
I think that they're useless, honestly.
Cause they're a lot like, you know, Yelp reviews. Is you hardly ever see anyone that's like, this was 4 stars out of 5, or, you know, I had a moderately good time. It's always like 1 star, everything is the worst, or 5 stars, everything is the best, you know?
I mean, honestly, if you think about how many times you filled out evaluations in undergrad and how often did you actually write anything? And I can tell you confidently that the times I remember writing things is because I hated the professor. Like, I did not write stuff, and it never occurred to me to write stuff for the ones I loved. So I used to tell my students this pretty frequently, like, hey, remember to say nice things also. Don't just be like, I hate her. but that didn't ever seem to affect them. So,
well, I think too, it's not just about feeling as though you know everything. Like, if you're actually listening to you have your students for like a solid 15 weeks, at least in my school, if you hear what they're saying, you're going to know what they like and dislike.
Exactly.
Like, if you're actually like interacting with your students,
yeah,
it's, you don't need survey. Yeah.
And honestly, too, I think that you can ask the students, you know, is this working for you? Is this not working for you? You can have those conversations in appropriate ways without doing evaluations. But evaluations being used for promotions,
oh gosh,
all of that kind of stuff is just horrific because, again, they're so biased and they're super, super racially biased.
I mean, I was going to say people of color as well.
Massive amounts of evidence that these things are terrible. And they don't, I don't think I have one time read an evaluation that genuinely helped me be a better teacher. So it just, all it does is make me feel bad about myself or make me angry about the world. So I try to avoid them.
Yeah, me too. I don't even think I read them in like the last year and a half. I just was like, I think post COVID, I was like, look, we're all in this together. Like no one's having a good time in COVID. So like, I don't need to, you know, and again, it's not to say that we can't be evaluated, but I want to like talk to you about it. Like I've heard students say, I don't want to take this test. Okay. Well, that's fine. But why?
Right.
You know, or this assignment is unfair, blah blah blah. Okay, well tell me why. As opposed to just like at the end being like, I hated everything.
My dean and I were talking during my evaluation and she was like, most of your negative comments said that you made them read too much. And I was like, I don't view that as negative. And she said, I don't either.
No. Well, and that's the thing is that I had one student say that they didn't want any evaluations. And I was like, well look, I don't want to grade them. But until we get to a world,
my least favorite part of this job is grading your papers. I don't want that either.
But you know, until we can hook our brains up to each other, and you can show me in your brain hookup that you got the information that I've given you, we have. Because trust me, when it's like a Saturday and I have to submit grades, I don't want to grade your essay.
No,
or 800 essays about Buddhism. It's not what I want for my life.
It's not what I want. I love my job talking about religion, but as soon as I have to read those papers, I think, what other jobs can I do?
and then we're like, none. So then we do
none. I'm trained for nothing else.
Right. Yeah. So students, if you're out there and you're listening, just know we also don't want to grade them, but we mostly get told that we have to.
So, well, hey, you know what else sometimes we don't want to do is
a lot of things, but tell me what I'm supposed to say.
I was making a really awkward transition to our topic for the day.
Okay, cool. Because I don't know which one you picked. You gave me options. So
you picked it.
Oh, did I? Well, I said my preference, but I didn't know that I picked it.
Oh, yeah, no, that was, I mean, I gave you two options.
I said one, and I'm like, wait, what? This is completely new information.
They are so prepared and organized. You have just seen behind the veil a little tiny bit. But we today wanted to talk a little bit about the Bible. And
that's right. My notorious line is I don't touch.
Yeah, you don't touch the Bible. Nope. But elaborate on that, Leah.
It hurts when I touch it. My hands start burning like flame.
There's a reason Leah doesn't go out in the sun.
No, should I be concerned that when I touch a holy text that my hand starts to char up? Man, these martinis are good. So
they really are.
No, I think I made the mistake one time, I should say, and applying for jobs in the States, don't say this, but in the UK there's very distinct areas of biblical studies and theology and history and world religions, aka not, at least in the UK context, not Christianity, like all the other religions. Like there's all these kind of different, at least at Edinburgh where I worked, they were all different departments. So in my mind, when I came to the States, I didn't touch the Bible because there were people who knew fluent Greek and Hebrew that touched the Bible, that slept with the Bible in a non-intimate way. But so I was like, but I made the mistake. I applied to a job, which I do AAR Southeast, and I work with someone at Campbell, so I can say Campbell out loud. But because I told her, I was like, I applied with you guys. She was like, I know. And it was funny because in the interview, they were like, oh, so you do theology. That's cool. Do you also do the Bible? And I was like, oh, no. Yeah. I don't do the Bible. And they just kept, upon further evaluation, I realized they were really trying to get me to say, yes, I did the Bible. Because they're like, are you sure? And I was like, I don't do it. I don't touch it. It's its own little. And I think part of it was respect for my biblical scholars friends.
Yes. For sure.
Mm-hmm. Is that they spend a lot of time really digging into that. And I usually just reap the benefits of their labor to analyze and interpret theology. So
that's
what I mean by not touching it, is that not that I don't look at it to worship.
Sure. Well,
to worship the Lord. But
I think that having a healthy understanding of the difference between biblical studies and theology is always something that I want people to hear me on when I talk about it, because you and I don't do that. That's not what we do, and it's not what we're supposed to be doing. And sometimes people get really frustrated, or like they'll start asking me questions. And obviously I have some opinions about understanding texts and things like that, but like I want you to go to my friends. I want to be like, here, so-and-so is much better at doing this than I am. And that person would be better able to answer your questions, because we have that healthy respect and because we understand the difference. But that doesn't always kind of translate over to our.
Well, people think that you just do all of it. And
and
for those of you who are interviewing for jobs, if you get the sense,
tell them they can do all of it.
At least if you're in America, tell them you can do all of it. If it's a small liberal arts college.
To be very honest and blunt, evangelicalism really tries to pretend like the only thing that we do is sit around reading the Bible and then like having emotional thoughts about it, you know?
It's just the Lear beast out in That's my thought.
Like I read Michael Bird has this book on understanding evangelical theology, and in the first part of it, and I know I posted this ages ago, but I'll post it again, is how like theological method. And he says that a lot of times in evangelicalism, what we see is just like dump a bunch of Bible verses into a meat grinder and like see what comes out. And we see this with a lot of people who say they're doing theology, and it's just like, well, this verse and this verse and this verse. And that's not what theology is. That's not how we do theology. But it's also not really what biblical studies is. So it's really...
just bad. It's just bad
theology. Just bad all around, and that's a wildly inappropriate way to understand the Bible. But I think that part of why you and I wanted to actually talk about our feelings about the Bible is to get kind of a better understanding of what we think that it looks like to study the Bible, or what it looks like to understand how the Bible is useful to us and how it plays into how we do our theology.
Yeah,
because we're not just dumping verses in.
No, and I think one of the things, in what Christy was talking about, there's a phrase called proof texting, and it's like you come up with some social idea, and then you're like, here's all the verses that support what I say. And it's used a lot. So like women in ministry, not being in ministry, you know, there's a lot of...
Timothy comes up, and you're like...
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Paul's writing. Right. And then you get a lot of the sort of, if you're talking about, you know, queer theology and people being against that, you're going to get Leviticus, you know, people bringing that stuff up. And so, but my point is not to say that the Bible doesn't say certain things that are controversial. I think it does. And it's not to say the Bible doesn't say things that I don't necessarily agree with, but I think what's important, at least from my perspective, is I'm not a Bible is an inherent person. So for me, I can read it a little bit in context, a little bit in history, and then I can kind of wrestle with that stuff and try to decide how much of this is being influenced by humans and then how much of it is perhaps divinely inspired, without having to think that every single thing I'm reading, which, by the way, sometimes is contradictory. I'm sorry, but I mean, just go to Genesis 1 and then you get
Genesis 1 and then Genesis 2. But also,
you get a new story in Genesis 2 and you're like, wait a minute.
I remember when I was sitting in my introduction to New Testament class with Craig Blomberg, who is a very prominent New Testament person. And he was like, the contradictions are there. Don't try to ignore them. Like, in one gospel, Jesus is entering the city, and in the other gospel, in the same story, Jesus is leaving the city. Like, which one is it, you know?
Or you just get John, where it's just like,
John is just having rapturous emotions about Jesus.
John maybe had an apple martini.
John had some apple martinis and then wrote his gospel. I mean, and the thing is, and I think that it's helpful for us to talk about what we understand or what we mean when we say that the Bible is helpful or trustworthy, or even to say words like infallible or inerrant, because all of those things actually mean stuff. And it doesn't just mean like, don't think about it too hard, you know? Because the Bible is a historical document, and historically people they weren't in front of a judge having to say like timestamp 1502, blah, 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 here's what happened. They were telling stories in the culture of their time.
Yeah, and oral traditions. I mean, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, you know, they had different audiences. They were talking, they were written at different times. They were talking to some, you know, you get the Jews being an audience, you get, you know, the quote Gentiles being an audience. So they're speaking in different ways to these people because they're trying to talk to a certain audience. And so the idea that it's just this,
just a perfect, very clear and simple document is so insulting to me, honestly. Like,
and also the fact that we took a sacred text from another religion.
Yes, we should.
And, you know, that's neither here nor there, right?
right. There are those conversations too. You know, someday we'll have somebody on here and we'll have them talk about that for us as well.
For sure. Like, we are talking about the Bible like theologians talk about the Bible. This is why I said I don't do Bible.
This is it. So one of the things that I thought was really helpful for me, because part of the ways that I like developed and grew and moved out of some of the evangelical spaces that I was raised in was at seminary and learning so much stuff. And one of my professors introduced me to T.F. Torrance, who the beginning of the Torrance dynasty. but I there was
remember, this great remember our edict is if there's no more Torrances left than Disney can't exist anymore.
That's great.
No Torrances in Scotland then.
Like, no more of the using the monarchs, use the Torrances. So yeah, T.F. Torrance had this article, and I read it, and I went to one of my professors who had done his work on Torrance, and I was like, this is the most like life-changing thing I've ever read. And Torrance talks about the Bible as being like a second tier incarnation. He essentially says that the Bible is equally a human document and a document that helps us understand God. But if we try to take the human element out of it and pretend like the Bible is giving us these miraculous notions and instructions for living in the 21st century, then we miss entirely the message of it. Just like we would if we took away Jesus' humanity. And I was like, that's really helpful, because I think understanding that those documents were written for a specific audience in specific cultures and with specific purposes in mind, like, you stop trying to find out how to use Facebook in the 21st century via the Bible. Or like, does the Bible support the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution and like absurd things like that, that people genuinely think that they can find answers to.
Don't get on Facebook and Twitter, kids. That's the moral.
This is truly the craziest place ever. But like you're looking, what is the purpose of the Bible is generally to help us understand this Christian view of God. And how we do that is through the eyes of humans who were wrestling through it and wrestling through their experiences. And if you look at it that way, it becomes like a much less of that. Oh, have you ever heard that terrible, like the Bible is basic instructions before leaving Earth? Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh my gosh. It's a bumper. Like people had it on their bumper stickers. This might
oh,
be.
Oh my gosh. I don't.
This might be a hardcore evangelical thing, but I've seen so many students say things about like the Bible is a rule book for life and stuff like that. And it's just not that at all.
Well, the issue too is that there's a lot of things that you could infer from it. It's like any other text. Like I always say this to my students is, have you ever been in an English literature class and you read, you know, X, Y, and Z? And there was probably as many opinions on the book as you had students in the class. So why would this book be any different? And also I would argue this book is more complicated.
Way more complicated.
And then the students will sometimes say, well, then what's the point? And I was like, well, you know, there's still a point to reading books, even if they were not exactly, you know, inspired. What's the point in me reading, you know, The Plague by Albert Camus? Well, the point is that there might be some insights into the world that we live in, you know, and maybe some ways of living that we pick up on that someone else picks up on in a different way. Now, this is, again, where bad theology comes in sometimes. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
I mean, you're right. Like, if we understand how complex it is, and it is, as I mean, I have a degree in English literature, and I've worked on English literature throughout my academic career. And this is the most complicated book because it has multiple genres, it has multiple authors, it's multiple languages, it's written over centuries, and you just don't have one way of reading through that. Plus,
even though there's a connection between the Old and New Testament, I mean, two different audiences.
Very different audiences. And then you have the complications that are added in by 2,000 years of the church helping us and working through what is the Bible. And I think that it's equally important to hear and read those things as well, because, you know, there's some stuff we don't have the luxury of time that some of those people had, you know, and like I have to do laundry sometimes and can't spend all of my days just sifting through all of these documents. But
that's kind of selfish, Christy. I think really you should.
Well, you know what? Again, if somebody would like to volunteer to do my, I would happily give that task over.
Also, but people could just read all the theology that comes from, well, and theology as a academic subject is a really good way to view a lens to view the Bible, because it's like mm-hmm. that's as many books as are on a theology shelf
mm-hmm.
and there's millions more
millions
like
more.
That's how many people read the same text
and came up with
all sorts of opinions. Different
interpretations.
And if you looked at Christy and I's shelves, that's a little section, that's our little corner, a tiny corner of what we probably like at this stage in our career.
Yeah. The stuff that we think is valuable and important. And like hearing from multiple voices, hearing multiple perspectives, all of that is so important to getting at what might actually be going on in all of these texts. But I think that it's important to keep in mind that like the Bible is not just a simple document we can sit down in isolation and sift through on our own. Firstly, because you know, as we just talked about, you and I are not fluent in Hebrew or Greek or any of those languages. So we need
I'm only fluent in Aramaic and Latin, so
we need those translators to help us. We need translators because translating languages is a very complicated and complex experience. It's not just like replace this word for this word. And so anytime somebody says to you, like, this translation is word for word, it's not. That's a meaningless phrase.
I feel like we're just like destroying people's hopes and dreams, right?
We are. And so it's so much harder than we make it out to be sometimes. And I think that letting it be complicated and complex is actually really freeing.
It is.
You don't have to feel like, oh, I don't understand this, or you don't have to start getting really worked up about weird things that you see in the Bible. Like with Adam and Eve were the first people and then they have children, who did their children marry? Like, you can just let that question go.
Right. And yeah, that starts to get, Oh no. Or like the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
They didn't make it on the ark.
We don't have to worry about that. Or are they still alive, but in lizard form?
And once again, man, this Appletini. I could have answered all of these art questions if not for the Appletini. I remember I was one of my first jobs was a children and youth minister, because when you're in the Baptist world, that's all that you can do if you're a woman. Womp, womp, womp. Again, thanks, Paul. I remember they started asking me a lot of questions. They were doing like the felt, like arc and art around the arc.
Oh God!
And they started asking me like questions, and I swear I can manage a classroom with 18 to 22 year olds, but when 5 year olds start on a train,
oh no, there's no way.
Like, one of the girls just looked at me and went, "Elephants," and I said, "Yes."
Yeah.
She was like, "They're very big." They are indeed. They were on the ark. And I said, yeah. Yeah. And then she goes, and then she just sat there and she was like, you know what else is really big? And I was like, no. And she goes, giraffes.
Giraffes.
I was like, oh gosh, we're going to go through the whole of these big animals.
We're going to work through every.
And it was kind of funny because she reminded me of like a lady who was gossiping and like side eyeing me. Cause she was just the whole time like doing these felt, every animal she picked up and put in the ark. She was like, you know what, Miss Leah, she was like, again, 5 years, 6 years old. She's like, I don't think my cheetahs are going to fit on the ark. Her felt cheetahs. She goes, isn't that unfortunate? And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm getting schooled. 6-year-old.
Yeah. But I mean, some of those just very like genuine practical concerns, you can just let them go. You can say, you know what, the Bible is not trying to teach me science.
No, and it's great. And you know what, there's certain aspects of the Bible that you might hold on to a little bit more, and that, you know, you may prefer, or that maybe speaks to you. And I'm here to say, in my opinion, that I think that's okay. Like, you know, as long as the ones you're holding on to are not making you like some weird incel in a basement or something. Yeah. But like, the ones, you know, maybe there's stuff that speaks to you. I think that to me is the inspired nature of it. Is that if you read it and you like, it gives you some gift or it helps guide you at some point in your life, or inspires you to do X, Y, and Z, then to me, that's the gift of the Bible. Yeah.
I think.
And thus ends my sermon. My Appletini
sermon. Your Appletini sermon. I liked it. I agree. I think that the takeaway for us is that there's just a lot of good things that can come from the Bible if it's used and understood correctly. And Bible scholars are there to help us out with that. And
claim to be one if you're at a liberal arts school.
If you're trying to get a job. Some of them are going to be at beer camp with us, so you can hear from them. You know, understand that, like, the what is it that Karl Barth, the Bible is meant to be the witness to the Word of God, and the Word of God being Jesus. And so, like, again, this is a very Christian-centric understanding of it, but that we're trying to witness what the history of the church has been able to get and be inspired by, and then what you're being inspired by, and just don't expect that the Bible is going to tell you what to do in every single situation of your life. Like,
no. And if someone says it does,
they're wrong.
I mean, I was going to say question it, but, you know, Christy's just going to go ahead and say.
I'm going to tell you. Look, it's just, it doesn't have
Where's Pete Enns when you need him? Where's Pete Enns? We need to ask him.
Pete Enns. Well, and that's, a good thing is if you have more questions or you want more specific talk, Pete Enns' podcast, The Bible for Normal People, is a great one to go look at.
Yeah, it is. We name drop him because he's going to be at Beer Camp as well.
He is going to be at Beer Camp. And so you can, again, come and interact with all of that. And there's a whole bunch of other people who also do this work and are great and helpful. And it's just, I think it's just important for us to keep in mind, like, what the Bible is and is not doing. And it's just, the Bible is just not telling us information about the Second Amendment or the age of the earth or, you know, what happened to the dinosaurs.
Or why the cheetahs didn't make it.
Why the cheetahs didn't make it.
She was really upset because she really liked cats, and I get that. Like, that was, it was a choice.
The Bible doesn't really explain to us how we ended up with, like, a million different dog breeds, and yet cats are only distinguished by the color of their fur.
This is a new revelation to Christy.
I just came upon the idea that cats have breeds, and I don't know what to do with that.
I mean, most of them are just colors. So
just the breeds are colors.
Not to oppress my domestic short hair, which is what they're called. But, I mean, one's a ginger cat and one's a black cat. And one's a white cat that's a psychopath.
So, Beethoven's my favorite.
Whereas my dog, I can tell you the percentages of what my dog is. But my cat is just a cat.
So. Dogs have really specific breeds.
So specific. Also, okay, here's a question. Last question I have about this. Do you think that there's ever a time and place where believing in, like, the divinely inspired nature of the Bible works, if that makes sense? Works is a big word, and I'm kind of purposely making it vague. Like, you think inherency... Like, it doesn't work for you and I, but, like, is there a time or a place where you think it would work for somebody?
Yes. Well, I mean, I don't believe in inerrancy as it's been used. And defined.
Which, by the way, is a big word, guys, just for, like, that the Bible is the absolute word of God. Essentially.
Yeah. It just means that there are no errors in the Bible, which is a different conversation. But the way that inerrancy is used usually means that everything that you could ever learn is in the Bible, and that the Bible is, like, without any kind of nuance. And that is a ridiculous thing to say, I think.
Man, that Appletini is making...
Appletini is really coming strong.
Also, guess which one of us grew up even... Which one of us did?
Guess which one of us has really passionate thoughts about this conversation. But look, I do believe that the Bible is the inspired deliverance of revelation from God. I believe that there's inspiration in it, and I feel a lot of reverence for the Bible. But again, I think that inspiration, it comes from the way that God interacted with humanity throughout history, and that you have to include historical understandings of that. And I think that includes not just when it was written and who it was written to and all of those things, but also the people who put the Bible together and developed this canon for the church. And then I also think it extends into how we read and understand it today. I think that inspiration is an ongoing experience and an ongoing thing that's going on. And that it didn't end with the last word written or whatever. But that we can use or read the Bible to have more understanding of God. I just don't think that it means like when the Bible said that God created the earth in 6 days, they meant literally 6 24-hour periods, you know, that kind of stuff.
I agree, but that's why we're friends.
Yes.
And I actually think that was a good like summary of what I think as well.
Yeah.
Did you know one of my fun Bible facts is that Revelation was the last book to be approved to be in the canon?
Oh, was it?
I mean, that's what I got told in seminary.
That makes sense. You know,
because they were like, it's just a little too wacky. They weren't sure if it was like
wacky.
Because, by the way, guys, the Bible, canon, as when we talk about canon, we talk about like the books that are included in the Bible, were chosen because there was a lot of books circulating.
There were a lot of books. Yeah, there were a lot of books.
And the ones that they picked, you know, it was a group of people that picked it. It was a council. And again, you can believe that the council is divinely inspired. That's fine. But in all of that, my fun fact is that, yeah, Revelation, they were like,
this one's weird, guys.
Think about how many cults could not exist if Revelation hadn't got included.
They had not done that. My favorite thing to talk about is the Gospel of Thomas, which if you haven't read or is a trip. But like, essentially, because when they were doing this, they were like, when do we think it was written? Who do we think wrote it, et cetera, et cetera. But also like, how well does it coincide with the rest of what we're putting in here? And Thomas was just like, so bizarre and written too late, honestly, but also just like so bizarre that they were like, absolutely.
They were like, we already got John in here. We can't do another one.
John is already in here. We're going to put Revelation in. We've got to stop with the wacky stuff.
I love that. Like with Thomas, they thought Revelation was less wacky. It's like 25 candlesticks.
What happens in Thomas?
right. 20 million horses upon which they ride. Oh, got it. Yeah, got it. Cool. And then Thomas is like, wait a minute. I make way more sense than that.
Thomas is like, Jesus was like really excited about his magical powers when he was a kid.
Oh, is that the one where he rose a friend from the dead that like drowned in a river or something?
No, he pushed his friend off the roof and then he raised him from the dead.
Oh, okay. Sorry, my bad. I know that there was one that contemplated Judas, and it was like, I think it was Thomas, or Judas betrays Jesus, but if Jesus is God, why didn't Jesus know? And maybe he did know, in which case did God place Judas to betray Jesus? And what does that say about God, Jesus, and Judas?
And it's just, next week when we talk about determinism.
I was like, I read that and I was like, oh. Yeah.
Yeah,
it was like, go ahead.
I think the historical, like looking at how the Bible got put together and like the development of the canon, is also helpful in how we understand what's going on with it, you know, including some of the issues around the Old Testament.
Yeah, and I think I joked about Revelation, but when I read, I can't remember who wrote it, you can probably Google this, but one of the things that I read was basically that they had a beginning and they needed an ending. And I remember being like, at first I was like, that's ridiculous. These are educated people. But then I thought, oh, they do have a beginning and maybe they do need an end.
And honestly, you know what?
All good stories have a beginning and an end. I mean,
when stories don't have a clear end, people get mad. Like, people's anger about how the Gilmore Girls' Year in a Life ended was intense. And I felt like it was a pretty clear ending, but a lot of people didn't. So maybe this is the first time that people were like, no, we need a clear ending.
I think comparing the Gilmore Girls to the Bible is a great idea. I will say, as one who watched it, I don't know if the Gilmore Girls was really an ending as an ellipses, but, you know, You know, we're trying so hard not to give spoilers away, but you guys can tell us if you think that it's an ending or not. And honestly, the fact that they thought Revelation was an ending to me is
bananas.
Bananas. Because if you read that book, there is a reason the cults read it. And they're like, well, you know, I always feel bad teaching. I teach religion in America and I teach the Seventh-day Adventists. And they're like the Millerites and all of that. And yeah. Like, well, they thought it was going to end on this very specific day, the world, like March, like 1863 or something. And March 17th, or we'll say St. Patrick's Day, they were into it. that's, by the way, that's made up, guys. But it was something like that. And then they were like, wait, no. So, well, that date happened, and it doesn't end. And they're like, well, maybe we really meant next year.
I remember this was just, maybe 7-8 years ago-ish. There was like a person who really was like, the world is definitely going to end on this specific date in like October or something. And a whole bunch of people like sold their houses and stuff. And there were billboards all over Colorado that were like, this is the date of the end of the world. And I just remember because the billboards were still there after that date came and went. And we were all like, I mean, at least take the billboard down.
There's that meme of that bear that's like looking straight ahead and then looks sideways. That's what I would be like, oh no. And also like selling, because that's what happened with that the Miller group, is that the great disappointment, they sold all their stuff and they waited for Jesus to come back, and it just didn't happen.
I mean, this happened with Paul too. This is like the most common thing to happen, is that Paul at one of his letters is like, Jesus is not coming back tomorrow. Stop selling off your stuff. Like, it's not this soon, guys. Calm down.
I mean, to be fair, he didn't give a date, Jesus, but he did make it seem like it might be happening.
He did.
Like, soon.
There was a bit of like, it's coming soon, guys, but then it wasn't soon.
Yeah.
Or it was, and we just don't know it.
Well, that's what the Seventh-day Adventist said. I think it's the Seventh-day Adventist. I'm not getting them mixed up, I don't think. But they said that Jesus returned, but was on like a different plane.
Yes.
Which is really kind of crafty of Jesus, if that's true. Because I'm like, we're right here.
We just can't see you.
We can't see you. Also, what is this other plane? I don't know.
Oh no. And then we get into metaphysics and I can't.
Well, luckily we're at 67 minutes, so you don't have to.
We don't have to. Well, guys, thanks for joining us on this apple teeny view of the Bible.
Of two people who are not biblical scholars.
But did go to
a seminary and have a solid view of, I know this, someone said this once.
Yeah.
But we don't know who it is.
We have strong opinions. But we did not get our references all that well.
No. And I don't have a computer, so I can't tell
you. Because Leah's in an undisclosed location.
Undisclosed location.
If you do have more questions about this, the Bible for Normal People is a great place to head.
It is.
They have lots of references, and Pete is a great guy.
I read Bart Ehrman's The Reading the Bible Again for the First Time or something. I don't know if it holds up, though. I read it in seminary.
It's been a bit since I read it. But you know what? Bart Ehrman also has a podcast.
Okay.
And it's called...
Maybe check that out.
It's called Bart Ehrman's Podcast, I think.
Oh, my God. Wow.
It's got his name in it, so it's really easy to find.
That's how you know you did it. Leah Robinson's podcast. Sorry, Christy. You're out.
It's just your name and you get enough listeners.
Wow. Dang. So I won't recommend that book because I've not read it in like 20 years. But
I will recommend the podcast. I listened recently. He did an episode on the Trinity and it was pretty good. So,
which is also made up. Okay. On that note.
Join us next week when we debate the Trinity.
Which was also created in a council. The end. See, we had a beginning to the podcast and now we have a revelation.
Join us next week when we discuss the book of Revelation.
Oh my gosh. Maybe one day.
One day. Guys, all
we can. Oh, Christy, we can drink Fireball.
No, never.
You have to. If you're going to talk about Revelation, you have to.
If we talk
to.
About Revelation, we have to drink Fireball. Oh, God. All right.
Goodbye, everybody. On Goodbye. That note. Bye.